RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell, Connor behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Do get to us, crushperformance.com. Questions? Comments, smart remarks, all welcome. If you have an idea or something you'd like us to talk about on the show, let us know. We'll pursue it. No question about that. Today, a very, very important conversation. As we look into the status of concussions and head injuries in sport, this coming off of one of the largest legal settlements in history as the U.S. Court of Appeals upheld the approval of the NFL concussion lawsuit that will see nearly $5 million go to each of the retired players to the tune of $1 billion. And now the question is this a good deal? Is it fair enough? Is it good enough for the players? One thing's for certain, those players and families who are in need are potentially going to get some much-needed relief. We're going to talk about that today on the show. And we're also going to be joined by Chris Nowinski, the co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, to talk about some of their new initiatives. They're one of the driving forces to improve player safety in the world of contact sports. And we're joined in studio right now by Crush favorite, Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist and currently assistant professor at the University of Alberta. Dr. Mrazek, thanks for coming in once again.
Good to be here.
Well, the timing is quite good, as, of course, the lawsuit settlement announcement came across the wire earlier this week. Just before we get to Chris, your quick impressions of that lawsuit and the settlement.
It's one of the biggest in history, so it certainly raises a lot of eyebrows. And in lieu of Jeff Allen's recent comments about, for the first time, potentially linking football to CTE, when he was talking to Congress, it certainly, again, I think raised some just increased interest in what is that link and why was the NFL talking or not talking about it in recent history. I think one good thing that has happened is that the education dollars that have been allotted in this recent lawsuit have also increased from the initial time that they were talking. So it just kind of shows that they're, I think the intentions of the NFL are also to really continue to promote, the important education links that are associated with concussions and management, educating coaches, parents, and players about what should be done and what they need to do.
So all the attention concussions and head injuries have received or has received in the media over the last 5 years, 10 years, for crying out loud, we've seen a bunch of different trends. We've seen the fear side of it, and to the point where even all-star and Hall of Fame football players are saying, hey, I'm not going to let my kids play. President Obama, I wouldn't let my kids play. And there was, so we start to see a withdrawal from sport. And on the other side, we see this really raising the profile and the awareness of a very important concern in sport.
Yeah, and the issue is what is the link between playing contact sports like football and hockey at an early age, and what is the long-term implications of that? And, certainly I'm going to say from a research and scientific perspective, we have to be very cautious in making conclusions, because we just don't know. We have not done longitudinal studies. We've not actually followed players, over the course of their lifetimes and looked at how many of those actually developed CTE. We just have our cross-sectional research, which tells us some things, but it doesn't tell us everything. And that's where we have to be very cautious here, because people make those links to say, oh, automatically this is going to happen. And, I've spoken to young players that are concerned about CTE and so on. So we have to just be very careful, because the scientific evidence, although we're gathering that data, it's not conclusive. The other thing that I think is really interesting is that, okay, you're a young player and you don't play sports. You take yourself out of contact sports. There's been some recent studies coming out of Europe that have suggested that individuals that actually play contact sports and have up until the age of 18, they have significantly lower mental health rates later on in their 50s and 60s. So we don't know the link between concussions, but we do know more of a link between, you know, just staying active. Something that you've always promoted is the importance of just being active and injury free. Well, we see that the importance of just being active is really important for brain and mental health.
Okay, so let's get to that later in the show. That is a very interesting statement. There's pros and cons to weigh here. And that's a very important conversation for any athlete, any parent of a young athlete, or any coach involved in contact sports. So let's do that. Later in the show, we'll talk with Dr. Mrazek about baseline testing, some of the new programs and protocols. We'll talk to him about what's going on in professional sport, and we'll delve into the science a little bit more. But right now, let's get to Chris Nowinski, co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Institute, or foundation, where they're doing a lot of the research and promoting a lot of the programs that are looking at athlete safety. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's been a while since we've had you on, but of course, this topic is always important when, you know, we look at athlete safety and, of course, what we know now about head injuries and concussions. And, of course, the coverage that this topic gets in the media has really stirred up a frenzy right from the grassroots all the way up to the highest levels of sport. And you guys are doing some great work there at the Concussion Legacy Foundation to bring some rhyme and reason to this problem that is plaguing sport right now.
Well, we're trying to provide solutions to the problem. It's big in scope. There's a lot to deal with. It can be life or death, so we have to take it seriously. But it's hard to sort of figure out what are the right steps to take. So, we're out there preaching those steps and sharing them through our website at concussionfoundation.org so that the parents and coaches and kids have solutions.
Yeah, we're talking with Chris Nowinski, the co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Now, Chris, for people that don't know your story, you came out of Ivy League football and went into professional wrestling, WWF, I believe, right?
It was E even when I was there.
It was WWE when you were there. And, of course, your career came short due to head injuries, and that turned you into this world of concussions in sport and trying to get a real understanding, and it's turned into this awesome thing that is now the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Maybe just fill us in where you guys are at right now from the time we first talked.
Well, as you've mentioned, we did change our name. So it's a new name and a new brand and a new push. And, you know, we had a lot of successes over the last year, which is exciting. You know, I can tell you from the research side, the more work we do, whether it's through our brain bank in collaboration with Boston University and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, or whether it's some of our clinical studies, it's seen very clearly that with the problem of long-term brain disease, the kind of things that we've diagnosed and, you know, talking to folks in Canada, Derek Bougard and Bob Probert and Chris Benoit, that disease is really related to overall brain trauma exposure. It's not really a problem if you have one concussion and don't get hit in the head otherwise in your life. But if you start getting hit in the head every year hundreds or a thousand or two times because you're playing ice hockey or American football or Canadian football or whatever it is, you open up the door to this degenerative brain disease. We now have diagnosed over 200 cases in the last few years and have seen it in new sports. So we're more and more confident that we need to reduce brain trauma, especially for children. So one of our big successes this year was we got U.S. soccer to finally put in an age minimum to start heading the soccer ball, because heading the soccer ball caused, you know, attempting to head it, colliding with people causes heard of concussions, plus hundreds of strikes to the ball and repetitive brain trauma. So now in the U.S., most people are adopting you cannot head before 11. We say don't hit your child in the head on purpose before 14, before high school, but 11 is the start. So if we create this world where we don't hit kids in the head, I'll be a much happier person.
Well, you guys are one of the driving forces behind this entire movement of improving player safety and athlete safety, and also the awareness when it comes to head injuries and concussions. If we look at some of the numbers on your website, which again is concussionfoundation.org, the problem, 3.8 million estimated concussions each year. One in six, only one in six are diagnosed. And when it comes to football, which is, of course, dear to your heart, 90 of 94 former NFL players have been diagnosed with CTE at the Brain Bank. This movement for U.S. soccer, this is a major coup in my mind. A few years back, Hockey Canada moved to eliminate body checking in the Pee Wee levels, which was along the similar lines, one to reduce head injuries, but also overall just improvement of player safety. So I think this is a really good trend, Chris, and you guys are really responsible for a lot of this movement that's going on.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, you mentioned Hockey Canada. Ice hockey has been, at the youth level, one of the great first responders to this issue with raising the age of checking. And the other side of that point is, it's not just great for safety, but a lot of folks believe it's great for skill development, because if you're trying to learn how to handle a puck while scared to death someone's about to take your head off, that'll make you not hold on to the puck as long. And so I think if we step back and look at this as a human and child development and even athlete development, if we remove repetitive and purposeful brain trauma from games with kids, everybody's better off. Everybody wins. Nobody loses. So I appreciate that ice hockey was one of the first movers on this.
Yeah, that's great. We're talking with Chris Nowinski, the co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Chris, you know, it's interesting that it's taken this long, you know, in retrospect, and knowing what we know now, of course, in hindsight, everybody's a genius, but to hear soccer making that move of eliminating headers for players under 11, to see Hockey Canada make that move of eliminating body checking, we're seeing a lot of other great movements, and you guys are spearheading some of them. Let's talk about this before we get into it. Let's talk about this Brain Bank that is one of the driving forces. The data and science that's coming out of the work you guys are doing there is fascinating. This is the VA BC CLF Brain Bank, the Veterans Administration, Boston University, Concussion Legacy Foundation Brain Bank. You guys have 259 brains that have been donated. 150 have confirmed cases of CTE. And all this is driving this science and awareness that I think is just fantastic. Maybe talk to us a bit about the importance of the Brain Bank.
Well, I think if you step back to one thing that's changed, is that the Brain Bank has proven there's a problem.
Right.
You know, if you actually do your history, and we were just having this conversation earlier today, we've known concussions are a problem for a long time. And 100 years ago, you can find books where they're talking about how serious concussions were. The 1905 diary of the Harvard football coach where I played talks about how he held the captain out because they were so concerned about him from the Harvard-Yale game, and that they used to give speeches to the team, like, don't play through concussions, like, pull your teammate out if you think they have one. And then we forgot about it. And part of the problem is concussions remain invisible to the naked eye, right? You see someone get one, and then 5 minutes later, they're a little better, and then a day later, they seem fine, although some people never recover. But most people seem fine or don't talk about it. CTE is a separate issue, but it's related to brain trauma. Where your brain starts to rot. It's literally like too much trauma. Same idea with smoking and lung cancer. We don't know which cigarette triggers the lung cancer, but once you get it, your lungs start to rot. And the same thing is happening with your brain. It's not cancer. It's a different phenomenon, but it's degeneration, and you're losing, it's a massive issue if you get it, because it over time, it starts in your frontal lobe and just eats away at very critical areas of your brain, and moving into emotion and memory and all these things that make you a shell of the person you were until you get dementia if you live long enough. So what's been great this year and recently is that we've got so many, the data you have, and you got to send me the page it's on. It's already outdated. We're up to 330 pledged brains. We're nearly 200 cases diagnosed. 330 donated brains. We have now over 1,000 pledged brains, including this year, famous U.S. soccer player Brandi Chastain from the 99 World Cup team. And then we were really excited just 2 weeks ago, Dale Earnhardt Jr., the superstar of NASCAR, pledged his brain to our research. So it's really rewarding to see athletes get behind this.
Well, I like it. And the pledging of the brains, you guys have, of course, Eric Winston as well. He's the president of the NFLPA, and of course Cincinnati, played for the Cincinnati Bengals. These athletes are now pledging their brains, and that's all in the movement to, I guess, help future generations be safer. What a great, worthy cause this is, and it's great to hear that you guys now have up to 1,000 pledged brains, Chris. This is amazing.
We have this great research registry, so you can go onto our website, Let Your Brain Yourself, and that also adds you to our email list. So you can sign up for studies while you're alive, and even you get a lot of information that you can use to become an advocate in your community. Because the reality is, and I just had lunch with somebody whose son has sort of never been the same after being failing to be diagnosed with a bad concussion in high school. And now going on to, even worse issues later on. But we're still not handling this thing right. You mentioned the 1 in 6 concussions being diagnosed.
Right.
We're hopeful that's what it is. But it's because kids are often too young to recognize they're concussed or realize that they need to speak up because there are problems associated. So, one of the most important things is to be an advocate, that when you see the concussion happen, it's your job to protect that child. Even if you have to walk onto the field or onto the ice to pull a kid off yourself, it's worth it every time.
Absolutely. Chris, so if people did want to get on and donate their brains, what was that link again? How can they go about that? Because I think that's great. And I personally know some parents and me myself who have been around athletes who've been concussed. My daughter as well, a freestyle skier, she's had it in a bad way. I've seen young careers end. How could people get involved? Can you give us that link one more time?
Sure. I don't know the exact page, but go to concussionfoundation.org. And search get involved, and they can pledge your brain. The official campaign is called the My Legacy campaign.
My Legacy.
When you pledge your brain,
yeah,
we want you to think about the legacy that you're leaving for the athletes that come behind you, and even your own children. We can make this game better. We can make it safer, but we have to take steps to do that.
Yeah, it is under Get Involved, and My Legacy is right there, so that's great news. And that is on concussionfoundation.org. We're talking with Chris Nowinski, the co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Chris, you guys move forward. And, of course, having, as you mentioned, great ambassadors like Brandi Christian, the U.S. soccer icon, Dale Earnhardt Jr. just coming on board, this really helps raise the awareness. But some of the studies that you mentioned and you guys are doing is really interesting. I wanted to talk to you about the work looking at the synthetic turf safety, because this is really interesting. 1 in 5 high school sport concussions are caused by surface contact, which is something I don't think a lot of people know. 1 in 4 in soccer and football, and that's really important. When we look at the turf situation here overall, everybody's thinking about ACL injuries and ankle injuries and the safety factor below the waist. I don't think there's a lot of people talking about the surface impact. This is a really important conversation.
Right, and that's why we're trying to start that conversation, because frankly, it wasn't even on my radar until the last couple of years that I really realized that you could make dramatic improvements in outcomes if we paid more attention to what's beneath our feet. You know, you think about how much time we spend in a sport like football or ice hockey talking about helmets and investing in helmet improvements, when the reality is, a sport like football and you play on turf, we're still talking about laying a rug over rocks. We're not talking about it. Should there be padding underneath? What kind? When your head strikes the ground, what should be the maximum impacts allowed? Because this comes from actually setting national standards. So we wrote a white paper to review the data. And again, we're blown away that it's 1 in 5. And the younger you get, the more the higher ratio of concussions are caused by striking your head on the ground. Because when you're younger, your head is larger relative to the rest of your body. Your neck is weaker. So if you fall, there's a greater chance your head's going to hit the ground. So we recommend folks pay attention and get that with the turf their child is playing on. Ask if it's been tested. Ask when it's last time it was replaced. Turf wears out and hardens over time. Ask when it was maintained. Are they redistributing the pellets that are there? Because if they're not, they're going to be really hard spots. And then when it's time to put a new turf field it's probably worth investing a little more money and making sure what's underneath is you put a shock pad underneath to absorb more energy. There's no evidence it increases any other injuries, but it will make your brain safe.
Well, and that's interesting, and I did read the white paper. Again, that's available for everybody on concussionfoundation.org, and it's interesting to see that, artificial turf can be made safe if it's structured and maintained properly, compared to a natural turf, which consistently in the testing seemed to be a safer surface. But it's great news as we see this increasing popularity of the artificial turfs, that with the right protocols and maintenance, it can be incredibly safe as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's most people, even in turf, say if you have, you know, well maintained, you know, high investment natural grass, your life, it can be softer. But you know, we use turf for a lot of different reasons, including so you can play on it 24 hours a day, and therefore we need to pay more attention because, you know, turf fields vary field to field. So a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Chris Nowinski, the co-founder and president of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Chris, as we talked earlier in the conversation, lots of great changes at the Concussion Legacy Foundation. And one that I'm really, really interested in and kind of proud of, just in the periphery, just so you know, is the movement into Canada. Tim Fleiser, the executive director for the Concussion Legacy Foundation Canada. And I really like this idea of the project going on in Canada, the London Concussion Project. This is a great thing for Canada, great thing for the movement, and I like the idea that it's going international.
Yeah, you know, so I was very lucky to play with Tim Fleiser when I was at Harvard. He was 2 years older than me, and I got to, he used to beat me up a lot, but now that we're older, we partnered on this. And, you know, he played 10 years in the CFL. He was number one overall draft pick in, I think, 98. And he recognizes, like me, that it's not us who are going to deal with these long-term issues. It's certainly our friends, or it's going to be our kids and their friends. And so he is leading an effort in Canada. And right now, they're focusing heavily on London and working with the university there, with Western. But, yeah, they're going to do a series of educational events along with some great CFL players. And so, you know, if you're in that area or if you want to get involved with Concussion Legacy Foundation Canada, you get there. You can find them on our website as well. You know, it's really great to move north of the border just because there's people we can help there.
Yeah, no, much appreciated there as well. Chris, just as we wind up the conversation here, what's on the horizon for the Concussion Legacy Foundation?
Oh, God. Well, right now...
A loaded question.
Right now, I'm driving up to Bowdoin College to go to speak to the students and the athletes. But down the road, we're you know, heavily focused on focusing more on post-concussion syndrome. So this is something that, you know, now that we've got a very, you know, mature CT research program, the other really area that we need to deal with is the fact that some people just don't recover from concussion, and it's one of the most painful and excruciating experiences of your life and really hard to deal with when you're a teenager. And so while we keep pushing these prevention initiatives, we're going to improve our services for those who deal with post-concussion syndrome so that they know there's somebody who can help them get through it. It's big, getting through it's a big problem. And so I would say, you know, our target this year is we want to help those athletes deal with post-concussion syndrome.
Oh, Chris, such great work you guys have done over there, you and the entire team. We'll continue to support it as much as we can. Again, the website, concussionfoundation.org. Chris, really appreciate your time today.
Great to talk to you again. Thank you.
There you go, Chris Nowinski, everybody. We got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, Crush favorite Dr. Martin Mrazek will be with us for the rest of the show. We're going to talk about baseline testing for athletes, how the Canadian Football League is dealing with concussions, and we'll revisit the NFL CTE conversation right after this. And we'll also ask the question, should you pull your kids from contact sports? You'll be surprised at the answer right after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com and join us Wednesday evenings at 7, Saturdays at 4. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, welcome back. Jeff Grishel here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. We are Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information, and we are behind schedule, so right into it. We're joined in studio by Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist and currently assistant professor at the University of Alberta. Thanks for sticking around, Dr. Mrazek.
Good to be here again.
Coming off a great conversation with Chris Nowinski of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, you know, with the NFL lawsuit settlement, we have a lot of public awareness. And even over the last decade, some of it is almost fearful. Some of it has been great because it's raised awareness and pushed science to maybe places it wouldn't have gone otherwise. So there's pros and cons here. But if I were to ask you right now where we're at in terms of our understanding of head injuries, because this is one of your true specialties, especially when it comes to concussions in sport, what kind of picture would you paint for our listeners right now?
Well, I think one of the best things that have come out of the research in the last few years is just really understanding how the brain works in the short term. And so the technologies allowed us to do our, you know, very specialized imaging studies. And what that has shown is that, you know, the brain does go through this vulnerable period. And so the fact that we've, I think there's been a real strong commitment to removing athletes from play. I know that's been a tough thing, and Hockey Canada wrestled with that for a long time, is do we, you know, allow a 15-minute period and if their symptoms clear up and all these type of questions. But the commitment was, no, we need to pull these kids out of play. And now that we have those imaging studies, we can see that even, you know, water molecule movement in the, along the axons, is different in the days after a concussion. So that's been really helpful to kind of reinforce the message that the brain is in a vulnerable state. And so even if the symptoms are pretty mild, we still want to pull an athlete out of play because we don't want to put their brains at risk. And so that whole message of, you know, better to, pull out of a game than to lose a season, when in doubt, sit them out, all those slogans that we've used, you know, the science is really strong to support that. So there's been a real progress in terms of really the importance of educating athletes and saying, let's pull them out. The longer term questions, as we alluded to earlier, are still there. We still have a lot more questions than we have answers right now.
Especially when we talk long term. Isn't it interesting? Because in the conversation in the last segment with Chris Nowinski, he brought up a very interesting point, I thought. You know, our understanding and knowledge of head injuries and concussions, this is not a new thing. I mean, he referred back to research and articles that go as far back as 1905, for crying out loud. So it's been there. And yet you see where we were even 10 years ago as compared to where we are now. It has just been a real short time, a light year jump in terms of how we handle the awareness. And now one thing I'm really proud to say or proud to be part of is our conscious efforts to return players back to play safely.
Yeah, and within that time frame, you know, maybe some of the listeners can relate to this, is even 5 years ago, we were saying that when we pulled an athlete out of play, that we wanted to sit them in a dark room and until they were asymptomatic. And so that's a traumatic thing for some athletes to be pulled out of the activity. And even if they're symptomatic, they still, it's very hard for them to think of not doing what they really love to do. And so even in the last few years, the impetus has been, okay, we want to let your symptoms to die down a little bit. But then even when you're mildly symptomatic, the studies out of Buffalo have shown just doing some light activity doesn't change the length of time that you're going to be out, but it helps you feel better. And athletes need to feel that they're doing something constructively, but they also need to feel better. And so their mental health rates are better just by doing something mildly active.
Yeah, just to be actively taking care of business, right? Because that's the way they've done. It's an identity thing that goes right to the core for an athlete who's been an athlete all of their lives to sit them out. Ooh, that's debilitating just by itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, take the thing that you love to do the most and then say, for the next 2 weeks, I don't want you to do that. That's not
my wife might be happy, but I digress.
Yes, you digress.
I hear you. No, but I understand totally. That's a great point.
So that's why we want athletes to stay engaged. And so it really has been a learning curve for the scientific community. But the results are really positive, so much so that the NFL is now sponsoring a really big study to look at How can we maximize that downtime in order to get athletes back to not only back to being recovering from their concussion, but maybe that'll even put them ahead in terms of their psychological makeup, because now they're actually doing trained mental activity. They're working on core skills that maybe they haven't been working on.
Oh, preaching to the choir. We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist from the University of Alberta. While that is music to my ears, because one thing that we're pretty passionate about is really constructive injury downtime, being progressive and really mapping out a plan to have the athletes return to play in a better state of performance than before they were injured. And I like the fact that we're coming up with strategies that are exactly like this for injuries when it comes to the brain and concussions. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I really think it is, and I think it takes the emphasis away on the negative side of injury, like the whole issue of baseline testing and baseline concussion assessments has become kind of a staple that many people are familiar with that. But I still think it's in a bit of a negative context that, okay, this is the bar, so if you get injured, then you have to reach that bar.
Right.
And there's a couple of studies, Michelle Keatley out of in Toronto, they're looking at, instead of just kind of taking that negative connotation to say, hey, this is the bar that you started at the start of the year. Maybe we can use that to progressively increase your performance, to use it as a way to not just to say that this is where we want you to return to, but we want you to beat this. So in case you get injured, you're already in the mindset that you're going to continue to work on that mental side of things, the mental cognitive testing. So when you come back, you should be ahead of the game.
How empowering is that for every single athlete, not just the athlete that gets injured, but every athlete that sees an injured athlete come back maybe better than before they were injured? This is a powerful, powerful program. I like it. And to see the NFL take this basically 360 turn when it comes to their recognition of the dangers and the, I guess, the reality of brain injuries in sport, that's fantastic for not just football, but I think everybody who is going to be dealing with contact sports or potential brain injuries, even outside of sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the benefits are definitely there. I think it's just really a matter of getting that message across and really understanding that message. Because I think, as you alluded to earlier, the concern has been is that a lot of the message around concussions has been negative. And, you know, a grad student of mine looked at ESPN headlines over about a five-year period. And, you know, out of 472 of them, almost 400 of them were on CTE related to concussions. So there has been kind of this bias in the messaging about saying, well, these are the really negative effects. And while we want to be aware and alert to that, I think what gets lost in the message is this is actually a potential to really look at what the mind can do and how we can help the mind improve, so we reduce injury, but also once if you do get a concussion, which is likely in any contact sport,
yeah,
that you're going to be that much ready to come back from the injury.
Yeah, we're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist at the University of Alberta. Well, let's talk about this. You know, according to the some of the data on the Concussion Legacy Foundation for Chris Nowinski, down in the U.S. anyway, they're looking at 3.8 concussions per year in the U.S. But one interesting stat down there, anyhow, is the idea that, you know, where they're estimating, and they think this is fairly close, only about 1 in 6 of the concussions is actually diagnosed. And that's still an alarming number to me.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, some of the challenges are just at the, especially at the minor sport level, it's just having the resources in order to be able to
sure.
do that. And so not having an athletic therapist until, you know, you reach a higher level of sport. I mean, all, you know, that potentially is some of the challenges. So for sure. And that's why, you know, the International Concussion Consensus Committee has come up with the SCAT 3. They're revising that now in this fall. It's going to be rising to the SCAT 4, just to really, allow for this baseline testing, because I think at the end of the day there is that responsibility. We know we're learning more and more about the potential outcomes of concussions, and that there's, you know, short term and in some cases there may be long term outcomes. So that's why I think there is a responsibility on the part of the parent and the athlete and the coach to make sure that that there is that message that being sent, that we're committed to reporting a concussion when it happens.
Yeah, maybe for our listeners and our athletes, our parents and coaches out there who are listening today, let's maybe just review what a baseline score is, because maybe some people aren't quite familiar with it. It's absolutely important, and it should be mandatory, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. And what a baseline assessment is that part of the start of the season, we want to get a sense of what an athlete's, both their balance scores are, what their cognitive abilities are. So on basic memory tests, being able to, you know, repeat digits in a forward and reverse sequence. And then importantly, their list of symptoms. So what is on a day to day? Do you have headaches? Do you have anxiety? Do you have any sleep issues? Because after concussion, symptom report is one of the biggest ways that we can track how an athlete's performing. And so when we know what that's like at before the start of the season, when there's that injury, then we can continually use that to track. And it's really interesting to see how players really like that self-evaluation. And that's why Fitbits and all these type of things, it gives us really great data about how we're doing. And really, in a sense, that's what we're trying to do here with the baseline evaluation.
I like it. Really quickly, Dr. Mrazek, before we cut out for a break, you guys, well, you've had the honor of going to London and talking and working with the NFL, but you guys have done some great work in the CFL, the Canadian Football League here, and there's some really cool initiatives coming up for this coming season.
So we're just continuing on with the work, you know, with the commitment to really understanding concussions. And so we're just adding some standardized test measures, to make sure that we have a really good idea of not just, the cognitive side of things, but also balance. And one of the areas that's become of interest in the concussion world is just eye tracking and just looking at eye movements because, you know, for every athlete, they have to see the field. They have to, you know, take that visual input. And sometimes that we can see some slight changes in the ability to scan even a few lines on a computer under time conditions, and that can be very helpful for some athletes in determining when they're ready for return to play.
Yeah, to see it and then to process it as well in a timely manner.
Yeah,
and in contact sports, there's no time. So interesting stuff. Hey, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to some of the text, but we'll also look at what you need to be aware of if your athlete's playing a contact sport, if you're playing a contact sport, or if you're coaching a contact sport on Crush Performance right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back to the show. Jeff Kershaw here, the con man. We are Crush Performance, your weekly source for sports performance and athletic development information. Crushperformance.com is the website. We got a jam-packed show as we're looking at concussions in sport. As the NFL... concussion lawsuit was upheld by the Court of Appeals to the tune of $1 billion. And that's a major settlement. Dr. Mrazek joins us in studio. Thanks for sticking around over the break. But this is an important conversation because it raises awareness. And I think also it might drive some of the research that's going to help us improve player safety right down to the grassroots.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as we talked about before, it's never a good idea just to take something out. So again, just to say, we're not going to play sports because we're worried about things. You always want to replace it. And the whole idea that youth playing sports is really good for their mental health and keeps them active and so on. And so I think it does really lead us, okay, yes, we want to avoid injuring the, avoid concussions to some degree. But it also leads to the question of what can we do to prevent them? And not just, you know, in terms of adding more rules, but actually doing things differently and, you know, incorporating mental activities and incorporating just brain training. You've always really emphasized the importance of just developing skill sets, especially with your mind. And some of that research is still, we're in the exploration phase of, can we actually prevent concussions by just, teaching players more awareness, by teaching them to be much more, quick to respond to, things that are going on in the ice. So, planned activities and just developing better awareness is always a good thing in sports.
Well, we've come a long way in terms of assessing, identifying, rehabbing, and returning to play, which is very, very important. Let me ask you this, for all the parents, coaches, and athletes who are out there, as we mentioned earlier, in the media, there's really been sort of a fear-mongering sort of approach when it comes to head injuries in sport. If I were to ask you what the average concussion looks like from the incident to return to play, what does it look like so people would know?
So for younger players, it's a little bit longer, and it's due to a lot of biological factors. But for mid-teenagers, around 14 to 16 years old, we're looking at somewhere between 7 to 10 days. In the collegiate and professional athletes, it's a little bit less. The adult brain is a little bit different, and so we're typically looking at somewhere between around 5 to 7 days.
And that's interesting. So I have a big question for you, because we look at the numbers in minor football in the States, and they're on the decline. We saw here in Canada, the numbers in minor hockey on the decline. Now, whether that has to do with the concerns of head injury or not, we don't know. But let's just say, okay, people are concerned, because we know they are, and we know certain people are. Should we be pulling our kids out of the contact sports?
Well, my answer to that is unequivocally no.
Right.
Because some of the more recent research that looks at the lifespan, so the importance of developing habits when you're young, and in terms of physical activity, and then continuing to do that, and how that's really important and helpful for the brain and mental health later on in life. And some recent studies that have been published in Europe have shown that individuals in contact sports, if they continue to play by the age of 18, they're going to stay physically active, and they have much lower rates of mental health concerns later on in life. So it just tells us that just being physically active, even in a contact sport. Now, the question is, We want to be careful that some people seem to be more susceptible to the impact of concussions. And those are the athletes, of course, that get our attention and that we may see later down the road that are having more difficulties. And so certainly we want to be understanding of that trajectory for some individuals that have that. But that's not to say it applies to everybody. And I think, unfortunately, the messages that you're talking about have been, well, this applies to everybody. And it certainly doesn't. There's a study that came out last year that looked at amateur boxers in New York, and their incidence of dementing illness was only slightly above the normal population. Mm. So it does say that, like, for some reason, these New York boxers, even though they were taking multiple hits to the head, it didn't guarantee that they were going to end up with significant dementia. And one of the beliefs is that these guys were physically active. So it's kind of interesting how we have this different research. And our question right now, that's why the longitudinal studies are really going to be important for us to understand the trajectories.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, clinical neuropsychologist from the University of Alberta. Well, something interesting, I think, that's come to my mind is the idea that, the younger brain seems to be more susceptible to brain injury, especially in the contact sports. So some of the great programs that we have out there now and initiatives, such as the banning of body checking up to the peewee age in minor hockey, a great initiative, protect those young brains. I wonder, down the road, 10 years, 20 years from now, when these athletes are going through the timeline, if we're going to see less, I guess, long-term issues because we're handling kids better. An interesting thing that's happened earlier this year in November is U.S. soccer banned heading in soccer up to the ages of 11. The researchers wanted it to be, just like the hockey researchers in Canada wanted it to be a couple years older. But that's a great initiative if you think about the young brain and how vulnerable it is. And maybe eliminating damage there could have a real strong outcome holistically on the other side.
Yeah, and I think what that does is it's not only looking to eliminate injuries, but also doing things that can strengthen and help those athletes.
Absolutely.
From a very young age. I think we do realize is that the young brain is a little bit more vulnerable, and so we definitely want to be cautious with that. And I believe that some of that relates to just you know, neck strength and head strength and core strength and the importance of developing those. So when an athlete does get through their adolescence years and they grow significantly, that their bodies are just that much more prepared to take on the more rigorous demands of sport.
Yeah, great. We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek in studio, clinical neuropsychologist and world-renowned expert in head injuries in sports. So we're glad to have you on board today. As we finish up the show here, how about we talk about, you know, we mentioned the great importance of baseline testing at the early part of the seasons. But if an event does occur, what could we talk about in terms of, for our parents, athletes, and coaches, in terms of symptoms to look for? Like, what would be sort of a step-by-step thing that we could share right now or process that we could share right now in terms of helping people understand and identify maybe a concussion when it happens?
You know, one of the most common symptoms is headache. But in young athletes, we do find that there are those subtle changes in mood, and parents often talk about just that their kid seems a little different. The one symptom that is common among most athletes is just that their brain feels mentally foggy. So it's kind of interesting that they recognize that there's something not right with their heads, and that difficulty with clarity is one of the most common symptoms. And so that's, again, our earlier protocol is we don't want to take any chances with that. We used to take a lot of chances. And so the new protocol that really has been in place for the last about 7 to 8 years, we're very interested to see what impact that's going to have in the long term for these athletes.
Great. Dr. Mrazek, thank you so much for coming into the studio today. Much appreciated. Great conversation.
Great to be here as always.
We've got to thank Chris Nowitzki for coming on. Next week on Crush Performance, it's the hockey offseason. Take advantage of this precious time. We'll talk to you then on Crush Performance. Thanks for tuning in.